Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian DeNovellis, and this is the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. It's that time of the year. March has arrived, in like a lion, out like a lamb. Hey, how many of our college basketball teams in this Tri-State will be lions, huh? I can tell you this much. I can rattle off a few lambs right now, all right? You know who. I bet you can, too. But you know what? Let's keep the lambs to the side for now. And let's talk about these Lions. There are some tremendous stories out there in the Tri-State. And if you follow this podcast, you know our goal is to highlight those great stories and teams and players in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And for the past couple of weeks, we've been really pumping up our Division III men's basketball teams, right? The NCAA Division III tournament, it's tipping off this Friday and Saturday around the country. And there are teams galore in the Tri-State, all over the field of 64. Top-ranked Wesleyan, they had been rolling, undefeated all season. But on Saturday, the Cardinals suffered their first loss of the season to, of all teams, their arch-rival Trinity College in the NESCAC championship game. Tough way to lose your first game. Wesleyan, now 26-1, but they're still the regular season champs of the NESCAC, so Joe Riley and company will still hang a banner, and there's still hope. Wesleyan earned the number one overall seed in the D3 men's tournament. They will host the first weekend games Friday and Saturday in Middletown, Connecticut. Trinity College will be there too. My hometown of Hartford, Connecticut. They got in, as will Montclair State and Jack tournament champs and Jack regular season champs. They will be hosting this coming weekend. Ramapo College, the runners-up from the NJAC, they'll be hosting as well. Stockton and TCNJ, four bids from the New Jersey Athletic Conference. Drew University's there. The Rangers are going dancing for the first time in their history. And then there's NYU, the new number one ranked team in Division III. Wesleyan goes down. NYU, number one. They are led by Homedale native Dave Klatsky in just his third year. 24-1 out of the UAA. Dave will be my guest this week on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, along with the head coach of the women's program, who's number one in the country, Meg Barber. Two for the price of one on this week's podcast. Both teams number one in the country. How do you like them apples? And if you haven't heard, NYU, the women, they own the longest winning streak in the country at any level, men's or women's. The Violets have won 56 straight games. They are the defending national champs and number one overall seed in the women's D3 tournament. What a show we have for you today. And if that's not enough, the biggest story in the Tri-State and maybe the country right now is none other than St. John's winning the outright Big East regular season title for the first time in 40 years. Yes, I am old enough to remember that one. Chris Mullen, Bill Wennington, Mark Jackson and company on that team. We'll talk about them. I'll also preview the Northeast Conference tournament. That tips off on Wednesday. Can anyone knock off the boys from hard-hitting New Britain, Central Connecticut? We'll get to all that. But first, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Mike knows the Jersey Shore. He also knows me. Tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So, what a story going on at NYU. The women and the men are both number one in the country after Wesleyan lost on the men's side. This week's D3Hoops.com poll lifted NYU, the Violets, to number one in the country. They both won their UAA championship. There is no postseason in the UAA. Both teams won the regular season. So, you know, it's kind of old school in the UAA. Who needs postseason championships? You win the regular season, you are the champs. Something to be said for that, right? So joining me now on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast are the head coaches, Meg Barber from the women, Dave Klatsky from the men. Thank you both for coming on. What a time to be a Violet, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Great time to be a Violet. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, so Meg, I wanted to start with you, but I'm sorry. The news of the day is the men vaulting to number one in the country. Dave, I have to ask you, you know, first time we believe in program history, the men are number one. What is that like? What does that number one bullet mean to you?
I mean, I think you just said what it is. It's a target. entering the NCAA tournament. You know, taking a step back though, it's really something to be proud of for our program to reach this level. We're not overlooking that fact that we are number one in the nation, which is incredible. Obviously never been done before on the men's side here at NYU. So I'm just really proud of our program, our players, our staff, the whole school. But you know, like I just said, it does put a little bit of a target on our backs now. And honestly, we just want to be number one when the season ends, more than at this point of the season.
So when you took over this program 3 years ago, all you've done is win. 18 wins your first year, NCAA tournament, 21 wins the second year. Last year, you win a game in the NCAA tournament, and now 24 wins and counting this year. When you took over this program, Dave, did you envision anything like this?
No. Short answer, no. Again, our goals every year, every different team we have is just to keep getting better, try and be the best team we can be. That was our goals coming in this year. I didn't really think too much about where we could get to until we really started getting about midway through the season when we were playing some really good teams, tough, and winning. And then I realized that we had a special group and that we could do some special things. But it's been a process. It's been a process building the culture, getting the players that fit, getting guys that want to be at NYU, trying to chase our women a little bit who have been there when I took over, and now they're still there. So it's just been really fun to be one surrounded by excellence and then build this program to a point where we're at today.
Yeah, Meg, you have known. Listen, you're a former player, 1,200 points in your career at NYU, and you come back to your alma mater and lead it to heights that, you know, they haven't seen. So your story, you've had this continued excellence, Meg, from our listeners out there, a current record, 56 straight wins, 31-0 last year, 25-0 this year. Have you given any advice to Dave on what it means to be number one and have that target on their back?
Their staff doesn't need advice. They're, you know, it's honestly just a really great environment to be in right now in NYU athletics. Men's volleyball is one of the top ranked teams in the country also. And so I think the culture in the athletic department is just a lot of excellence and a lot of support for that excellence. And we're in good company, you know, side by side with the guys.
Well, how do you handle it? You know, you went through all of last year and won a national championship, obviously, and then carry that over into this year, where obviously it's the same goal. How have you been able to stay on top and maintain that, you know, excellence in winning?
I mean, it definitely starts with our players. You know, we have experienced players that are very selfless. They are extremely hardworking. You know, they put the team goals ahead of their own. And I just think, you know, I'm a very fortunate coach to be in the locker room that I'm in with the, you know, again, we have a lot of talent, but it's the type of people that we have in our locker room that I think has made the last two seasons so special. And, you know, this year's team is very, very different than last year's team. We did have to kind of reinvent the wheel a little bit with, you know, and I know no one feels bad for us in that sense with the players we have, but we did have to kind of reinvent who we were this season. So the two seasons to me, although, you know, a lot of people talk about the wins combined, it feels like two very, very different teams and really, truly two very different seasons that we've, you know, taken on. And I like where we're at right now, but this is where, the real fun starts. We pride ourselves on every game trying to go 1-0 and looking at the game in front of us, but this is a time of year where you really have to focus on that and have everybody buying into, not looking ahead and just being ready for the next game.
I know no two teams are alike. Even I'm a little older than you guys, but the UNLV teams that tried to win back-to-back championships, and those Duke men's basketball teams in the early 90s, right? They had slight differences. But coach, you do have the reigning D3 National Player of the Year, Natalie Bruns. We are still in an era where this is the last year of graduate students. And how, I mean, having a player like that back, come on, how much does that help with the continuity of what you're doing, having Natalie here?
I mean, it's the best. She's again, just as a person and as a student athlete, she's a 4.0 student. She's in a really demanding master's program in cybersecurity, and she's just crushing that as well. So, who you see on the court is also how she is off the court, how she is around the office. We really hit the jackpot when she could have gone pretty much anywhere, D1, D3. And the fact that she chose NYU has made my life a lot easier the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, I think she's making our country a lot safer in the next, 10 to 20 years. 4.0 GPA at NYU in cybersecurity. I feel safer already, coach.
Yeah, same.
Wow. One more thing about your roster here. When I see a player, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Jamie Bahar, grad student from Lehigh, 6'1" at the D3 level, who shoots threes. She's made six threes in a game four times, seven threes in a game. That's got to be a matchup advantage, NYU.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, versatility is every coach's best friend. So I think that's what has made our team so different this year in terms of that dynamic. We have a lot of versatility, and she's, one of the best inside out players probably in the country in terms of being able to stretch, defenses. And her playing alongside Natalie Bruns has really opened up the floor. It's allowed a lot more movement for our guards. So she's, again, thanking NYU for the grad programs and the, attention we've attracted over the years. She really could have gone to a plethora of places. And, obviously having her and walking in and being a starter on day one for us has, really helped to put us in the position we're in right now.
Yeah, for the listeners out there who wondering D3, D1, you're talking about high academic schools in the UAA, just like the NESCAC, schools like Chicago, schools like Rochester, schools like Carnegie Mellon, Emory, elite programs where they could play at the D3 level, and you add Division I transfers or graduate students coming in, Johns Hopkins, that's an advantage. Dave, not to be outdone, your roster has eight graduate students, eight graduate seniors, two seniors. I mean, those are full-grown men that you have there. What is it like coaching, guys who are almost your age?
I wish I was still that age. But
You look
anyway,
like you could still play, Dave.
my body doesn't let me play so much anymore, but I do get out there every now and then. No, it's great. It's different. It's just a different world in college sports, and NYU is supremely set up to succeed in this new era because of our grad programs. Honestly, we have some of the best grad programs in the country. When you're 21 through 24 years old, to be in New York City, I was there. I did it from 22 to 30 years old, and I had a blast. If I had been able to play an extra year of college basketball while being in the city, I mean, what's better than that? So we've been fortunate, and we've really done our homework on who to bring in. And like I said, or maybe I didn't say, or I was thinking it is. We want guys that want to be at NYU, and they're around. They're around. Great, great kids that will buy into the culture, buy into winning, put themselves behind the team or secondary to team. So we've been very fortunate. But you said it. I mean, we're coaching men. we're coaching men right now, and there's a big difference between when you bring a freshman in and you watch them grow, which is also part of what we do, and we've got a couple of those, and then bringing in 22 to 24 year olds that have been through adversity, have sat on the bench, or have maybe not played at all, maybe have been through a little bit in their own lives. So you get a little bit different character that you can coach a little bit differently. Even though you might have only had 6 to 9 months with them, they're more mature just in age. So it's been really enjoyable. It's been different from my first 15 years in the business, but very enjoyable. And I know winning helps, but it's just been a really good pattern and formula for us so far.
So both of you alluded to this. Having listen, NYU is it's an expensive school, all right? But the value that you're getting for the education, when people say NYU, they immediately think high academic standards. So how much of a recruiting, not advantage, but a recruiting tool is that when the kids come over there and you show them the education that they can get and being in, the city and playing in one of the toughest conferences in the country. To either of you collectively,
You got
what
it, Meg.
type of an
She's
advantage
really good at this question.
I mean, I see it as a huge advantage. I think, regardless, every coach is going to look at their biggest strengths, right? That's your selling point, is always your biggest strengths outside of, the culture and the basketball program that you're trying to build. So, for us, academics, no brainer. I think NYU is a highly sought after institution, regardless of athletics. So, we had over 120,000 applicants this past cycle, which continues to break records. And, I think particularly since we were talking about the grad transfers, our graduate programs and the opportunities to be an intern in New York City year round are one of the biggest pulls. You can take a class in finance on Monday and Wednesday, and Friday you can be, actually testing that out in an internship, right downtown. So I think, some of those perks in a sense are obviously where we're located. But I would still say that recruiting here is still needle in a haystack. I mean, we are looking for very specific types of people. Obviously, you have to be very high academic, that the financial aid package has to, be what's best for your family. And, you have to be an elite level basketball player for both programs. And so, we do our best, but it is not an easy task to find, the absolute best fit all the time. But obviously, the players we have in our programs right now are getting the job done.
Yeah, and you have to have the grades to get into the school. You have to
Yeah.
be academically eligible there. It's not like you're
Yep.
gonna, bend any rules to get a kid in, I would think.
Yep. Yep.
Right? So Dave, you're talking about Wall Street. You had an experience on Wall Street. You such a great player at Holmdel High School. You and I have that Holmdel connection, Dave, where you played there. I taught there, not at the same time. All right, so we have that Holmdel connection, but then you go to Penn. That's where our connections end. I have no Ivy League experience. Stud player at Penn, held the assist record there and had some very good teams. But then you go to Wall Street and you pivoted away from basketball. How about what brought you back into basketball and how you got to NYU? I know we don't have all day, but just tell us a little bit about that path because I think it's fascinating.
Well, your definition of stud player and mine are a little bit different. I had a fun career and was a very good role player on a very good team. But Penn did set me up to get into Wall Street, and I did that for 8 years, the last four of which I was volunteering at Stevens Tech and was just loving it. So while I was going over there after work days to practice and work with the guys, I knew if the opportunity presented itself, I would jump in. I didn't really want to jump in like most coaches have to now, where you got to be a GA and then an ops and then a compute, a video coordinator and then move four times. So I got lucky. Matt Langel, one of my teammates at Penn, got the Colgate job, and we talked through it, and it worked out. And then I went up there with him. So, and then the rest is really history. We did really well there and was able
Yeah.
to get this incredible job at NYU. So now we're here.
Yeah, the every experience along the way helped. You won three championships at Colgate. You've shared a title at you at NYU and now won your first outright title here in your third year. So Dave, as both of you look ahead to the NCAA tournament, Division III is a little different. They do have a number one overall seed. I believe Wesleyan on the men's side still earned the number one overall seed, but it's not like they seed them 1 through 16. You have these little pods. And to me, explain to me, Dave, how the new number one team in the country, NYU, does not host and has to go to York, PA for the first and second rounds.
So I've done a lot of digging on this because, like I'm sure most of your listeners, this rule was foreign to me when I joined D3 a couple of years ago. And in the handbook, it essentially says that men's and women's basketball will alternate hosting each year and each 2 rounds. So this year is a women's first 2 rounds, men's the next 2 rounds, if both teams qualify to host. So, are we happy with this rule? No. It is the rule. It's nothing to do with the committee. The committee has guidelines, so it's not a committee issue. They have guidelines to follow. It's a broader issue than that. And I do, I would hope that maybe your podcast or some of these other interviews that we do will shine a little light on it. But to me, in reading the manual, the NCAA is playing a little parent to a 5-year-old type thing is how I read it. Like, if your school qualifies, we don't want you to have to make a hard decision of who, if you can only handle one, is it men's, is it women's? That's a hard decision. So we'll just make the rule for you that in this year it's women's and this year it's men's. Where a school like NYU, they can do both. And this is not an NYU problem. This is not a men's program or a women's program problem. This is the NCAA dictating that we don't have the choice. So I would prefer if the NCAA said, okay, each school, you make your own. If you can only handle one, you make your own rule on how you alternate every other year, but you have the choice if your school can handle hosting both. And that to me would make more sense, but that's not what it is. So we will go with it. We'll have to go on the road and hopefully come back to New York. And hopefully it all works out. But that's the rule, and that's what we're going with.
So, okay, I know it's one game at a time, one round at a time, but if you get to the Sweet 16, win the first two games, there's a possibility you could host, is what you're saying.
There is a possibility we could host. It's regional, so they try and limit schools traveling too far. I do believe, I haven't really looked at it too closely, but I do believe the bracket was set up that most likely, being the number two seed, we would be able to host. And then that's not fair to Meg's team. That earlier statement that I just made, I think works even is even more like
Sure.
emphatic because they would have a chance to repeat and they might have to go on the road in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Which just doesn't seem fair. And I know fair is a very tricky word, but that's what we're dealing with. We'll take it one game at a time and we'll let the committees put us where they may, and we'll do our best.
Yeah, Megan, in a year, not a year, but in an era where, let's face it, I my daughter played Division III soccer at Montclair State. And I've been more in tune with Division III athletics because of this. There's so much catering, obviously, to Division I that it's kind of like they just make up the rules at Division III, and they don't cater to, is what I'm trying to say. They don't cater to the teams who are the best teams to be able to play regionally and play at home, is what I'm trying to say. You could be the number one team in the country in any sport and have to go on the road the first two games. Whereas if you're UConn, you're playing in Connecticut, right? If you're South Carolina, you're not leaving the state, and you might not even leave the whole area. You might go from South Carolina to Atlanta. You're not leaving that region until the Final Four. Whereas in Division III, you might have to go to Virginia Wesleyan or Johns Hopkins or something like that. And as the number one team in the country. Have you experienced that, Meg?
Well, I think the irony of being in this rare air with Dave and the men's program that we're both currently number one. I mean, I think it's such a small percentage chance that that happens, but certainly the opening rounds, for the type of schools that support, basketball the way that they do, I don't think it's that rare. So, we went on the road last year as the overall number one seed. To start the tournament, and the men's team was home, and then we got to come back to host at home, kind of, hopefully in the situation that Dave will be in this year. And I think we understand the financial constraints of Division III. That's a real thing. If you have no one around you and you're the number one team in the country, you might have to fly somewhere, right? Those kind of things make sense, I think. Where Dave and I feel now, I mean, we could make arguments all day, but I think at the end of the day, there's so much work that goes into supporting our programs and, from the equipment room, athletic trainers, our Office of Student Athlete Excellence, and to be able to play at home in front of all those people that help us get here is like, I mean, it's one of the best parts of being in college athletics, sharing it with your college community, sharing it with the students here, and continuing to build that fan base. So I think that's probably the biggest, outside of the players wanting to be in their own beds and not miss class and that kind of thing. It's just missing out on that chance to share it with the NYU community, whether it's, Dave weekend one or us weekend two. That's the part that, feels like it takes a little bit of wind out of your sails, but you have to get over it because the games are coming and the teams are coming for you, and someone has home court advantage against you. And if you dwell on that, which we have been in that position before, kind of losing a day or two of prep in terms of like the dwelling part of where we're going, it doesn't do you any favors to win and move on. So, it's just the unfortunate place of, kind of how things are set up.
And let's face it, playing the schedule that you both do in the UAA and non-conference, you've gone into hostile environments, so you know what it's like to go there. And sometimes it's as you know as coaches, it's good to get away. Let's talk about your matchups in the first round. But before I do that, Meg, I had to look up this statistic. Your margin of victory this year is 39 points. You're beating teams by an average of 39 points per game. And last year, when you were 31 and 0, you were winning by an average of 26 points a game. So let's do the math. I'm good at math, simple math. You're beating teams by 13 points more this year than you did last year. That's what it means to me. Any concerns that you haven't had a close game all year?
All of our practices are set up to be as competitive as possible, and our second group is, they're not quite the first group, but they are just as talented as a lot of these teams we will face in the NCAA tournament. So, in a lot of ways, I think, coaches always say you want your practices to be harder than games. Our practices have been harder than games. So, I am not upset that we haven't been tested, in a way. But we've had, the grind of the UAA season, we've had teams that have held us for a quarter or, had a tough half and things like that. I mean, we've seen all different styles of play. I think there's really great coaching in our league. So, in ways that I look at the game, I think we have been tested. People looking at a scoreboard, it certainly doesn't quite look that way, but I don't really pay attention to the scoreboard. I'm just watching like efficiency of possessions and efficiency of defensive possessions, and trying to squeeze a little bit more, and find areas that we can improve still right now, to get ready for what we're about to see.
Yeah, you see, I think I've never heard of them. Gallaudet?
Yeah, they're a team out of program out of Washington, D.C.
Okay, so you have them, and on the other side of the draw is Trinity College from Hartford, which is right where I grew up, or UMass Dartmouth. So kind of handicap your first round match here, coach.
Well, the Trinity's coach actually went there this year, and she was previously at U Chicago, so she's been in the league, in the UAA for a few years, and will be at least familiar with our program, although, like I said, I think we're playing very differently this year than, ever before. So, again, I can't look past the first opponent, but the second round matchup, two very, very good teams, well coached, very balanced. UMass Dartmouth has five players in double figures for them, and that's pretty much what we have as well. So, what I like about our team is we lead with our defense, and we can bring that on the road, we can bring that anywhere. So, that's what we're going to continue to rely on to move forward.
Awesome. And Dave, the road goes through York, PA, as we talked about before. Your first round matchup is against Cortland from upstate New York. What do you know about them?
I know a lot about Cortland. One of my first hires, Mo Kearney at NYU, he was an assistant coach with us at NYU, is now the head coach at Cortland University. So he's the head coach. The assistant there is a guy named Pat Stasiak, who I worked with at Colgate for 3 to 4 years. So very close with them, have been rooting for them since he took over the program. Was going nuts when they won their tournament. Didn't really think we had a chance to play them. So
You
now
think
we're stuck in this
NCAA knows
position.
this? And Dave, sorry, do you think they work in mysterious ways sometimes?
I think it might have been that. I think it might have been that. But regardless, it's a really good team that has really come along. They're young. They're going to be even better next year, but I know they want to beat us bad. So it'll be a really good game. I haven't really dug in too much. I know they're a really good defensive team, but we'll be ready. I'll be happy to see my friends up until game time, and then they're on the other side, and we're going to try and beat them.
I love it. I love storyline. I'm sure you're a little nerve-wracked about it, but I love storylines like this. So Meg and Dave, before I let you go, Dave, you have a podcast as well. So it's called Stat Chat Podcast. So for our listeners out there, tell them how, all of us, how they can listen to you on your podcast.
So it's been a little bit of a hiatus for a couple of
Oh.
years, but if you want to get into the nitty-gritty of basketball and the statistical side, I had some really good conversations with people that range from high major college coaches to NBA assistants to WNBA players to overseas coaches, and we just talked the game, talked about what leads to winning. Things we may not be thinking about on the statistical side really helped me develop my head coaching philosophies and everything. So, if you're into that kind of thing, you can go check it out. It's somewhere, but I'll record another one at some point in the near future, near being a vague description.
Pressure's on you, Dave. I follow you on Twitter and it says, Stat Chat Podcast. I'm sorry, I didn't know you it's been a couple of
Bit of a
years.
hiatus, a couple of years, but it's fun.
Listen, that you it's you can go back into archives of any podcast and find something interesting to listen to. I don't care what it is. So, Meg Barber, Dave Klatsky, I have had a lot of fun talking to you both. I hope you had fun talking with me on the podcast and wish you both the best of luck. How great would it be a few weeks from now if NYU was hoisting two banners? Wish you lots of luck. Thank you.
That would
Appreciate
be
you, Brian.
cool. Yeah. Thanks so much, Brian.
Man, that was a lot of fun. Two great people, two outstanding coaches, Meg and Dave. Look, obviously the coaches, they're finding ways to motivate their teams, but I have never heard of a team that is beating their competition by an average of 39 points a game. What is going to happen if it's a one possession game? How are they going to handle it, right? UNLV, the men, didn't handle it so well that year against Duke. But I'm going to say this. There is no Bobby Hurley and Christian Laettner and Grant Hill that's going to match up on the other side of NYU in the women's tournament, okay? They are the overwhelming favorites to repeat. It would be one of the most shocking upsets in Division III tournament history if NYU doesn't prevail. I know they have to play the games, but they are overwhelming. We'll see if they can win six in a row. And how great a story would it be if the NYU men do it. Look, don't bet against Dave Klatsky. They are experienced. You heard it. Eight graduate seniors, two seniors. A lot of them play prominent roles on his team. They are grown men. They have size. They can shoot it. This team defends. I don't know if they're the best team in Division III. I cannot say that, but they are certainly one of the favorites. And okay, bro, you're not going out on a limb here. They're number one in the country. I get that. But I'm just saying, sometimes in Division III, it can be very muddled based on, the number five team in the country in Division III might be the best team, but they have three losses because they play in a brutal conference. It just works out that way sometimes. So if you're looking for something, some different type of basketball to watch this year, check them out. You can go to NCAA.com. Games are streamed, Division III. Go to a game. They're fun. All right. Head to Wesleyan, head to NYU, head to Montclair State, head to Ramapo. There are games around. You can find a game and you can watch some really, really good college basketball at any of those places. So thanks to them. All right. Let's get to St. John's, okay? Because I was at the Garden for the coronation and St. John's has not played their best basketball. It's no secret. But they found a way to hold off Butler on the road, and they found a way to beat a Seton Hall team that was game at home. Is it nerves? Is it just that time of the year? Do they need more motivation? It's all of the above. These teams are gunning for them. St. John's is in first place. They are getting the other team's best shot. So this is nothing new to St. John's. They have found ways to win games all year long. They've been in close games. They've won more close games than not. They are New York's team. They're like the old Knicks were in the 90s. They're not going to win pretty all the time. I mean, they're not winning that ugly, but this game was certainly reminiscent of those old Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason teams, right? So they won. And just listen to their head coach, okay? This team has done something they hadn't done in 40 years. 40 years. St. John's fans have not had a Big East regular season title since 1992, all right? That's 32 years. An outright title since 1985. So it doesn't matter how you win it. They won it. And they have a chance in a year where I didn't think it would happen. If they beat Marquette on the road, they will have won 18 games. I didn't think a team in this conference would go 18-2 this year. All right. I thought 16-4 would win it, maybe 17-3. And it might end up being that. That was my prediction at the beginning of the year. All right. But honestly, I thought it would be UConn or Creighton. I didn't think it would be St. John's. Rick Pitino in year two is way ahead of schedule. Were they one of the top three or four teams in the Big East when the season started? Yes. Were there a lot of people predicting them to win the regular season title? Hell no. Rick Pitino is one of the great college basketball coaches ever. We've said it. They're gritty. They're gutty. Davon Smith didn't have a good game. Kadari Richmond didn't have a good game. It was Zubi Ejiofor and RJ Lewis carrying this team over the top when Isaiah Coleman and Dylan Adewusu were having great games, when Godswill Arianrian and Manny Okorafor had their best combined game of the season. And there hasn't been much of anything to brag about from the center position, especially from Manny Okorafor. But Seton Hall's been injured, especially Manny. So Shaheen Holloway said this afterward, they haven't, he just wishes that they had been healthy all year and they didn't have so many injuries. They haven't been able to practice. They haven't had a full team until recently, and you kind of saw maybe what could have been from this team, a more competitive team. All right. But they were competitive for 30 minutes. This game was tied with 10 minutes to go. St. John's was committing turnovers, missing free throws, bricking layups. And in the final 10 minutes, they found a way to win the St. John's way. And it was RJ Lewis and Zubi Ejiofor to the rescue. Those two players were brilliant. Brilliant. They were not going to let St. John's lose this game. They were not going to let them lose a game at home. And I'm sure you saw the stat by now. St. John's 18-0 completed their first undefeated season at home since 1932, 93 years. 93 years. None of Joe Lapchick's teams, none of Louis Karnisecca's teams ever went undefeated at home. And it was RJ Lewis and Zubi Ejiofor carrying them to the finish line, combining for 38 points and 16 rebounds. And I had a discussion, little discussion on Twitter with our guys from Big East Barroom. All right. I love Ryan. I love Tyler. But I had mentioned afterward, after the game, when I was quoting Shaheen Holloway, Shaheen Holloway said in his post-game presser in front of the media that he believes RJ Lewis should win Big East Player of the Year. In his mind, it's RJ Lewis, and it's not even close. His words, not mine. I've been saying it on Twitter for 3 weeks, two and a half, and I've been saying it on this podcast. I'm with Shaheen. RJ Lewis is the Big East Player of the Year, with all due respect to Ryan Kalkbrenner. And Tyler and I were going back and forth from Big East Barroom. Tyler saying, "Hey, did you forget about Kalkbrenner?" And I get it. Tyler came at me. He's averaging more points, more rebounds, obviously more blocks. He's going to be the Defensive Player of the Year again in the Big East. I believe that's four straight years, if I'm not mistaken, right? He'll be the first four-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year because he's been here 5 years. Let's face it. All right, so that's a little skewed, but still, point well taken. I'm not saying Ryan Kalkbrenner won't get Big East Player of the Year. Would it surprise me? No. He has a lot of people in his corner. But what I'm saying is, in a year when St. John's has done things they haven't done in 93 years, when they haven't done things they haven't when they haven't done things in 40 years, and they were predicted fourth and finished first, and a player like RJ Lewis has been so consistent. He has been the one constant. Zubi Ejiofor has been very good, but RJ Lewis has been their best, most consistent player. He has raised his game from last year. He is a beast on the boards. Watch the way he goes at it on the boards. Did you see that follow back, that follow put back slam? Okay, that's what I'm talking about in this game. He's a wing, and he attacks the glass like he's a four on both ends. He is arguably the best rebounder in the Big East at his position. Okay. He rebounds, he defends, he is a much better passer than he ever was. All right. He never passed. He sets up teammates. He makes everyone on this team better. He'll get first team All Big East along with Zubi Ejiofor. But because of what he's done, because they are the best team in the conference, and Tyler also pointed out that last year, the best player on the best team in the conference, Tristan Newton, did not win Big East Player of the Year. It was Devin Carter from Providence. And I get all that, but that was then. This is now. Tristan Newton also had Donovan Klingon on his team. Tristan Newton also had Stephon Castle on his team and Cam Spencer, four NBA draft picks. I don't know if there's an NBA draft pick on this team, and I truly mean that, other than RJ Lewis. I don't know if Zubi Ejiofor is an NBA draft pick. In my heart, I've said it, Kadari Richmond is not an NBA draft pick. I don't think he's an NBA player. And I don't think Zubi is an NBA player. I think they're fringe two-way players at best. RJ Lewis is. And when you're doing the things he does and carrying this team night in and night out with a wonderful supporting cast of all Big East players, but not the elite, you know, elite best of the best that UConn had last year. That is why I think that RJ Lewis will win Big East Player of the Year. He certainly gets my vote. I'm still concerned about this team's free throw shooting. Too many turnovers the last two games. I believe they missed 12 free throws in the game. If they had played an upper level team in the Big East, they would have lost this game by 6 to 8 points easily. Easily. They're playing with fire. Rick Pitino says the statistics don't show it. This is a better shooting team than they show. I'm sorry, Rick. I respect you. I respect what you've done. The statistics are what they are. You are the second worst free throw shooting team in the Big East. You are under 30% from three. I don't care how many you make in practice. You're under 30% from three. Those statistics could come back to haunt you at one point or another. And if you don't believe me, look at what Rick Pitino said on Monday when he met the press. And he said it, his words, not mine. This team, meaning St. John's, we can lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament or we can go to the Final Four. I agree with that 100%. I said it last week. If they're hitting threes and hitting free throws like they did against UConn, they're a Final Four team. If they don't and they play like they did against Seton Hall and turn the ball over 16 times, you better believe they're not getting out of the first weekend. So we'll see what happens. It can go one way or another, but there's no denying they are the best team in the Big East. All right, last thing I want to talk about is the Northeast Conference tournament. Who is the best team in the Northeast Conference? We've seen it all year long. It is Central Connecticut. They are head and shoulders above everybody else. Patrick Sellers, he's won 20 games in back-to-back seasons for the first time in Central's Division I history. Not even the great Howie Dickinman accomplished that. Patrick Sellers has a bullseye on their back. Central Connecticut was the number one seed last year. They got upset at home by Wagner. Could Central Connecticut lose at home? Sure, they could. They've lost twice this year at home to Wagner and LIU. LIU is lurking on the other half of the draw as the number two seed. So they wouldn't play until the finals. But Central Connecticut has home court advantage should they win all the way through. All the way through. And Dietrich Gymnasium seats about 3,000 people. So you can imagine what a little bandbox that is. I think Central Connecticut has learned from last year. I think last year has made them better this year. They have two of the top five players in the conference, without a doubt. They have probably, without a doubt, they will have the Northeast Conference Player of the Year. I believe it'll go to Jordan Jones. Devin Hade is also very good. It's like 1 and 1A. So in any given game, Central Connecticut will have two of the top three players on the court. You know, these other teams have dudes too. FDU is the number four seed. They have the number one scorer in the conference and Terrence Brown. He can light it up. But FDU is not a good matchup for Central. I believe Central will walk right to the final. I will be shocked if they don't get to the final. They have Lemoyne in the first game, the eight seed. They should win that game comfortably. And then they'll face the winner of Stonehill and FDU. Stonehill is probably the better matchup, or the worst matchup, I should say. I don't think FDU can play with Central Connecticut. They lost by 11 and they lost by 21. Stonehill might give them a little better game based on the matchups, but Central Connecticut should go right to the final. They have the longest winning streak in the country, if you haven't heard. Yale losing to Harvard was a big upset. They had the longest winning streak in the country at 13. Now that belongs to Central Connecticut. Winners of 12 straight, longest active winning streak in the nation. And even though they won't have to go on the road, they have 12 road wins as well. This team is battle tested all year long, Central Connecticut. They lead the country with 12 road wins. They lead the country with the most active, longest winning streak in the country. They are going to the finals, where I'm going to guess that they will face LIU. Would it shock me if Wagner gets there? No. Donald Copeland, championship pedigree. They are the defending champs. I think LIU and Wagner are the two best teams on the other side. I think they'll meet in the semis. I think it'll be Central Connecticut versus, I'm going to say, FDU in one semifinal. I think LIU will play Wagner in the other semifinal. The Sharks have something about them. LIU, they're going into the postseason, winners of six straight games. Outside of Central, they are the hottest team in the Northeast Conference. I think Wagner has been too up and down all year long. Can they capture the magic of last year and win three straight? Sure. Would it surprise me? No. They have a great defense. Anytime you play defense, defense travels. They have a chance. But I just think LIU and Central Connecticut are the two best teams. They're playing the best right now. And I think they will meet in the NEC championship game next Tuesday. And I think it will be Patrick Sellers and the Blue Devils in hard-hitting New Britain that will be cutting down the nets for the first time since 2007. Central Connecticut will be your Northeast Conference champions. That is my prediction for the Northeast Conference. And that will do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I could not do this without you. Thank you for your loyalty. Thank you for your fellowship. Thank you for following me. Please tell your friends. Tell them about the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Tell them to listen, download, and follow us anywhere you catch your podcast. Of course, my thanks to Dave Klatsky and Meg Barber from NYU as well, and my sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. It's tourney time. March Madness is here. Enjoy the games, everyone. It is a fun time of the year. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.